Welcome, welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your hosts, Matty Wood, Matthew Davis, and the Roto-Gut, Vlad Settler.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We're just 2 days away here from the start of the regular baseball season, aka opening day, and we're recording on Tuesday, March 28th. I'm here with Matthew, Matty Wood, Davis. I, of course, am Vlad Settler. And we went to Vegas, and we're back.
It's a beautiful morning. Good morning. I'm so excited that we are recording in the morning versus the evening time. This is my time to shine. I have the coffee running through my veins right now, so that's good. And we are ramping up. It is finally the week of baseball. We have opening day on Thursday. I'm taking the girls to Wrigley Field on Sunday to watch the Brewers and the Cubs. So I think I'm going to see Freddy Peralta and possibly Jameson Taillon or something to that extent. So yeah, it's awesome. Vegas was great. It was fantastic seeing you and a bunch of other great people. Right. And then also meeting new people, finally getting to meet Andrew Geller, the Guilds, and Bob Cromatola and Rob DiPietro, et cetera. There was just so many people, new and old faces. So it was just such a great time. And everybody, it sounds like, at least the majority and everybody that I spoke to, really liked the layout that the NFBC had at the Mirage. So shout out to the Mirage as well, or Hard Rock, if that's what they are now.
Yeah. Or, well, yeah. And shout out, of course, to Greg and yes, the NFBC for picking that location, Tom and Derek for all their hard work. It's really crazy. I mean, people go for different lengths of time. I know myself, I'm usually on the same schedule. It's usually just a couple of days, Thursday morning through Saturday night, just a couple of drafts and hang out with some people and get out of there. I know some people are there for longer, but it's it could be overwhelming just as far as like how many people there are and how many people you want to talk to, because there are a lot of us that have been around the industry for a while, and you want to have a chance just to talk to as many people as you can, catch up with old friends, obviously meet some new ones. And it's really hard in such a short period of time. I mean, there was some point, I think, a day and a half into the trip, and I'm like, hey, Matty, Govier, let's take a picture. Like we haven't had more than like a kind of a 2 second conversation. It's like I've talked to like everybody, but haven't even had a chance to see you, and obviously I see you all the time, kind of over the internet when we're recording and things like that. But yeah, kind of sometimes you take it for granted, like, the friendships, relationships. It's just crazy how many people there are to see and to hang out with. And and even the new people, I feel like a lot of the folks that were there for the first time, coming in shy at first. By the end of the weekend, you got like 10 new friends. There's always a topic to talk about. That's kind of the beauty of it. We all have that thing in common is fantasy baseball. And it's very easy to get acclimated.
Yeah, things go by really, really fast. It seems like the clock speeds up quite a bit. And then how you were saying, like, oh, it's like a day and a half later, and me, you, and Michael finally get a photo together. Jason Anthony messaged me when he got home and said it was great seeing you. And I said, next time, let's be more conscious of spending more time together. He's like, I know, I don't even feel like I did see you, but we did see each other, but just simply not enough time. And then meeting those new people. So Rob DiPietro and I have been friends for about 4 years now, and we've spent quite some time, like you and I do over Zoom or StreamYard or whatever it may be. And then him and I finally got to meet and hang out, and him and I shared a lot of laughs together. And then Griffin Behringer, who a newer player in the NFBC, I shared a lot
Griffin
of those
Benger.
Laughs with
I've,
him as
I've
well.
I butchered his Benger. Name before,
oh,
so I got to...
Okay, yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. Sorry, Griffin. Sorry, Griffin. So I had a really good time with those guys in general. And one I've known for a little bit longer, and then Griffin a little bit newer. So it's just such a great atmosphere all around. It's amazing. And shout out to Mike Masato as well, Mike the Mouth. The party was amazing. It was a great time. And that was the longest that I have ever stayed at the party, well past my bedtime. So just great all around.
You were up past 8 p.m. at night. It was quite the scene and quite a few hours beyond that. So very, very nice. So the drafts, like the things that we actually accomplished there of incredible importance. You have quite the, I saw quite the screenshot from you. Your live event in Vegas You know, of course, the main event is, you know, it's going to be about, I think, over 750 people in the overall prize component. Each league is, you know, of about 15 people. And your draft live in Vegas was, obviously you weren't doing it for, you know, for screenshot purposes. You want to try to win 200 grand and overall, but it looks really sexy. Tell us a little bit about your start, where you picked from, and kind of your first five picks and how you got there.
Yeah. So I was team eight, right in the middle of this draft in the main event in Las Vegas. A lot of good players, a lot of familiar faces and names in it. And my plan was, I didn't think Shohei Ohtani would, can't say fall to me. You know, there's a lot of good players in the first round, but that was my main target. I would have been willing to take him quite a bit earlier if that was the position I was in. But so I started off with Shohei Ohtani. And then in the second round, I definitely wanted to pair him with a starting pitcher. And the night before, or the two nights before, I should say, I had drafted Aaron Nola in the second round. And this year, I'm trying to do a better job of diversifying early on if I have similar evaluations. So in the second round, Jacob DeGrom and Aaron Nola were both there. And those were sort of the top two pitchers, you know, available in my evaluation. So I went with Jacob DeGrom instead of Nola. And then in round three, well, actually, let me backtrack real quick. So I was telling Zach, if Nola and DeGrom are gone, because pitching is probably going to get pushed up and get really aggressive, I'm just going to go Max Scherzer in round two. I need a starting pitcher, and that was going to be the next guy. So it was sort of DeGrom, Nola, and then Scherzer for me. So I have Scherzer evaluated over Verlander and Alcantara and Brandon Woodruff. Those are the guys that went before him in this draft. So if DeGrom and Nola were gone, I was going to go with Scherzer. But lo and behold, I went with DeGrom. So then in the third round, I was thinking, okay, maybe I can get some speed, you know, in Francisco Lindor or Jazz Chisholm, because I think all those starting pitchers are going to dry up. But it didn't. And there was still Christian Javier, Shane Bieber, Kevin Gausman, and Max Scherzer. And it is still the max pick for Max is pick 38. I got him in the third round, 3.8. I before just shouting out his name, I just paused for a minute and went to Twitter, typed in his name to make sure everything was okay. I was like, what the hell's going on? Why isn't Max gone? And you know, in the main event on in Vegas on Saturday, there's eight main events going on. So you hear players being drafted constantly all around you. And Max Scherzer was just a consistent second round pick. And so I was like, what just happened? I know that I knew that he was pitching that morning too. And so I went to Twitter and checked the news, and it was just basically Max Scherzer struck out 11 in his final tune-up. He's ready for opening day. So I went with Max Scherzer. So yeah. Ohtani, DeGrom, and Scherzer.
That's an incredible start. It's especially great week, this first half week of the season, where Ohtani's going to get a start against the A's, and I assume that you're going to use him as a starting pitcher. So you've got three incredible aces, a really nice way to kind of get off to the start of the season. But man, that's fantastic. That's a Max pick on Max. And we saw that quite a bit in the main event. I think for us posting it sort of out of context on Twitter, you know, I posted over the weekend, oh, Soto was a third round pick in a draft this weekend in live main events. So was Jordan Alvarez. And people were like, what's wrong with people? Are people crazy? It's just kind of the way things fall in the main events. And yes, we do have a blend of really good players or just, you know, people with money. It's a mix of people. And some of those people are getting better and they want to get better. You always have an occasional rogue drafter here and there. But for the most part, it's fairly competitive. But I think what happens when you see something like that occur is I think people are kind of locked in to the strategy or plan that they have when they're going to the main event. And there really is something about sitting there in front of other people. There's a more of like a competitive atmosphere. Although friendly, it's still competitive. And I think sometimes like maybe some people just don't want to get thrown off their game and go with a different plan. And I don't know. I think that might be a possibility. You know, like in my main, thought long and hard about what I would do from the nine pick. I knew that I already had a Bo Bichette from a previous main event. And my plan pretty much was I was going to take a starting pitcher. Just the way I had lined it up, looking at rounds two and three, I didn't think there really was going to be a starting pitcher for me that I would like, just the way the things usually map out. Granted, I didn't have the, you know, the gorgeousness of a Scherzer falling in the third. If I knew that was a possibility, maybe I wouldn't have taken a pitcher. But that's how it went. I took Corbin Burns to start, and I went with it. And I had quite the pickle in the second round. Austin Riley was a big target for me, but Yordan Alvarez was on the board still. So, you know, that's just one of those things. I could have gone either way, but I just sort of stuck with my plan and what it should have been. How will that pan out? We don't know. We'll see later on in the year if that was ending up, you know, as a good call or not. Two picks later, it fell. Alvarez fell into the lap of Gray Albright and Donkey Teeth of Razzball, just kind of the way that things shook out. So they got a great deal on Yordan Alvarez, so we think, here in the middle of the second round. But, you know, I mean, don't you think that's possibly the case? Like, why guys fall that far? Like, people kind of just want to stick to their plans and not go crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. Team 6 and 7 and or team 5, 6, and 7, I thought for sure we're going to pop them. So I really didn't, I wasn't like sitting there going, oh, if Max makes it, I'm, you know, I wasn't stuck on that whatsoever. I was looking at Lindor. I was looking at Javier and Gausman, et cetera, a closer, right? Romano, whatever, maybe. And team 7 had Kyle Tucker and Paul Goldschmidt to start. So you think two hitters, they're going to take a starting pitcher. And then team 5, they didn't have a starting pitcher either. But fortunately for me, team 7 went Tucker, Goldie, and then said Marcus Semien. So maybe they had a team with Max Scherzer in a main event already and wanted to diversify. Maybe they had a team in the main event that started real pitcher heavy and they just wanted to create a different build. We just never know. People have different evaluations. People want to start roster constructions differently. You know, there's just so many different equations to how we get to where we're at. Hopefully it works out. I living in Chicago, I do love going to baseball games, and I'm looking at schedules constantly right now, and the New York Mets are going to Milwaukee early next week's, and I think I'm going to be going up there to watch Max pitch.
Nice, as you should. And by the way, that game you go to on Sunday, I believe, if my memory serves me right, it'll probably line up being Justin Steele. So we'll see.
And is it Peralta or is it Lauer? Are they mixing up the lefty?
I think it's Lauer. So I would really love for Freddie Peralta to pitch this weekend, because I did get stuck in one pickle of among all my teams, and where I'm very careful that I make sure I have a starter everywhere. I do have one team that is might be one starter or reliever short for that first week. Not the end of the world, but.
Yeah, I definitely got the pitching matchup screwed up. It's going to be Lauer versus Steele.
Lauer, Steele, nice.
Lefty on lefty crime. That's right.
Before we kind of get into some review of things and looking at roster madness over these last couple days, a lot of these teams finalizing their rosters, just wanted to just quickly touch on my auction experience, because it had been 5 years since I last had done a baseball auction live. Pretty much just been a snake draft guy for quite some time. 5 years ago, it was 2018, I believe. Yeah. I did an auction with Matt Modica. We shared a team. This year we auctioned against each other. And I was in that auction.
I'm sorry. Me and Zach sat right next to you and Mo.
I remember because it was our first time meeting in person.
Yes, dude. Yes.
We had known each other. We hadn't worked together yet. We were both from LA. I think we eventually ended up going to some baseball games, but yeah, I think that's the first time we met in that auction room. So a lot of great beginnings.
Funny, yeah.
But I remember it well because that was the year Noah Syndergaard basically was out for the season in the preseason, and we had spent a lot on him. So that was kind of a kick. That didn't work out too well. But this auction was fun. I mean, obviously, it was a loaded room, man. There's absolutely loaded. I already mentioned, you know, Modica. John Stadmuller has been, you know, a beast for many years, pretty much like a professional fantasy baseball player. Jenny Butler just sniping me. We went to war over Oscar Colas. Had to do a coin flip to get him. Obviously Toby. Man, just so many good players in this draft or in this auction. And it was a great experience. I think, for me, I mean, like, I feel like I'm pretty competitive and you know, I kind of want to get my players. I had a good plan in place. Like, I had allocated, general sort of bit, you know, ranges. And how I wouldn't go over certain amounts basically throughout that whole 23, like those first 23 players, I had it, you know, mapped out in Excel, like what I would spend. And if I change something, like if I went from a Seager or Lindor type up to a Bichette, then I would adjust in real time somewhere else. I would like lower my catcher bid from like an $8 Gabby Moreno to like a, you know, $3 Grandal or something like that. You know, I would like just continue to move things. And it was good. It kept me focused because I do think because an auction's so long, it takes, you know, over 4 hours, sometimes there can be lulls and you can, you know, you get tired in the middle of it. So you kind of need that to kind of keep you focused. And I enjoyed it. It was really fun. I did have a plan to get one of the top three guys and spend up to $48. And that was Acuna, Julio Rodriguez, or Aaron Judge. And then I did end up getting the best deal on those three because Acuna and J-Rod went for like 45, 47, and I got Judge for 41. So I thought that was a good deal. Obviously not a lot of stolen bases there. Ended up going a little off plan. Instead of getting like a Corey Seager type or Lindor type, I ended up spending 40 on Bo Bichette. So between there, those two guys, you know, $81 on two players, it essentially became like a Stars and Scrubs build. But it ended up nicely. You know, I got my boy Luis Robert, who I know you know drafted a bunch as well, got him for 23. You know, a lot of you know, guys in the cheap range that I was happy with. You know, guys in the $5 to $10 range, guys like Ty France, Brandon Lowe, Anthony Rendon, Jared Kelnick, who I didn't really plan on. You got Max Scherzer for 32, stash Carlos Rodon for 16, Sonny Gray for 7. So I mean, yeah, don't want to kind of go off about the team too much in detail, but it was fun. It was a heck of an experience. I'll do it again next year, like without a doubt. And I'm excited. And you know, the other component of this, of course, is the in-season work. Like I got my team, but now, man, I got a whole year of fab of lineup managing. It's only just beginning.
First and foremost, that's what makes auctions great. You leave with Bo and you leave with Judge. There's no draft in the world. You get to do that. So bam, you've already got to do what you know, you're your own owner, your own manager. You get to just kind of create your own puzzle, which is just awesome. My strategy was way different than yours. I wanted to spend $85 on two pitchers and a closer.
Yeah.
80 to 85. So $36 Cole, $27 Christian Javier, and $19 Devin Williams is kind of like where I went. And then sort of call it the Dave Potts method. When I first started going to Vegas, I noticed Potts sort of put together these offensive hitters of $8 to $20, you know, a $6 Benintendi or a $17, you know, $8 Jeremy Pena and a $19 Will Smith, the catcher. So I kind of went with just this like middling of that. You know, I got my Ian Happ, of course, for $13. I left Las Vegas with 100% Ian Happ and Jeremy Pena. Those were the two offensive players that I ended up with in every single main event or auction that I did in Las Vegas. But yeah, so that was basically my plan was sort of the $85 to the two starting pitchers and a closer, and then kind of go from there. So that's it worked out, hopefully. But at least I was able to do that because in some other auctions, you know, I was noticing that some of these starting pitchers were going anywhere from $4 to $5 more. So we'll see.
Oh yeah, I do remember one point in time where I was legit, I don't want to say upset. I guess I'm kind of showing my poker face here, but there was a gentleman in our auction who I hadn't met before, but very nice guy. He came up, I think on one of the breaks in our auction and was like, "Hey man, you know, really nice to meet you. You know, big fan of your work, podcast and all this stuff." It was really, really nice. And then, you know, obviously you could tell he's not just like, you know, copying my stuff. He knows his stuff and is doing his own thing. There was a point later on where like, okay, I need a utility and I am, or like a, I'm taking Brandon Belt here, you know, it's going to be just like, you know, $2 and I could only go up to $4 or something like that. So I had to strategically think I had $4 left for two players and I could have gone two or three on the bid. And I was thinking very hard about it. And at the end of the day, he's like, you know what? I'll just go, you know, it was in a way where I could go up one more, but not more than that. And so I said it, you know, I called out Brandon Belt. And it's going once, Brady going twice, four. And so this dude still steals Brandon Belt. I do not look that in direction. I do not look that way. I'm just like a little steaming inside. And then later on, I realized like, dude, I don't own these guys. These are, you know, these are fantasy players. Like there could be more of the people that like Brandon Belt. You know, it doesn't have to be like, you know, they did it on purpose, or that maybe he needed him for his team, or he wanted his to his team. But yeah, if you're listening, you know, Bill, you know, what's up, man? Nice snag. Very impressive, sir.
Sounds like Bill tilted you pretty good there, buddy.
Yeah. It hit hard.
Did you acquire any Brandon Belt over the weekend?
Yeah, I think so. I think I drafted him in the live main event. I think I got him somewhere around like 22nd, 23rd.
Yep. So I did as well on my Thursday main event. So you and I are going to, we're going to ride that wave one more time, amigo.
That's cleanup hitter Brandon Belt to you.
Bang.
So we'll see. We'll see. I mean, dude was just, you know, out this week with like, you know, stomach bug, like, I mean, just like a walking IL stint. So, I mean, if it'll be a miracle if he makes it through even part of the season, but that's what I'm rooting for. So, and I'll probably hold on to him an extra week, even if something did happen, just for old time's sake. So we're going to talk today about, just looking over some of the rosters. We've got a few predictions there at the end, but, again, wanted to remind everyone that our sponsor is Prediction Strike, and they're fantastic. We work with them, and basically, it wondering if you could own stock in a player like Aaron Judge or Paul Goldschmidt. Prediction Strike's a company that can really make that a possibility. They're basically the only performance-based sports stock market where you can buy and sell shares of professional athletes like they were stocks. So it's like Robin Hood and DraftKings had a baby. You know, Sandy Alcantara up 150% over the last year. Investors are making a killing. I think Reed Detmers was under a dollar last week when I wrote him up, and now he's kind of moving up. So a lot of great ways to create profit there, make some money. They let you basically create portfolios of your favorite athletes. You can make money and just really get closer to the game. So check out Prediction Strike. You can download their new app. Use code FTN when you create an account. And basically, yeah, you know, buy, sell, hold, share players, shares of players. They move up and down based on their performance and supply and demand. You can trade those shares. It's phenomenal. So again, predictionstrike.com, use FTN as a free promo code to get $20 off. Promo code FTN.
I bet you Clark Schmidt's probably really cheap on there right now. You need somebody like that, you know, in one of those markets compared to like our high stakes fantasy market. That's how I would look at something. I'd go over there and look at who's been, you know, gaining some helium and who people are starting to get excited about, and then kind of look at maybe a different market and see if there's a way to capitalize it. There's always room to make more money.
Yeah, I think it's worth even just checking out. Not just because sponsor us, but I think like a lot of the super sharps are just really busy in draft season right now, and they'll kind of come around to this at some point. They'll get into DFS and other stuff, but now's the time to kind of strike on some of these players cheap, because, you know, when I was looking at Detmers, Miguel Vargas, like the markets weren't really moving very quickly on them. So I think now might be a good time to kind of hop in there.
Go buy that Steven Matz share right now while you can.
get it. So let's talk some injury news over the last day or so. The first one is a doozy. It's Tristan McKenzie of the Cleveland Guardians. Had the nice breakout season last year, became a top 100 overall pick, essentially, you know, fifth, sixth rounder. But in an MRI on Monday, it revealed a strain of his teres major muscle, and he'll be shut down for a couple of weeks. He might be out for a couple of months. What do you think of this with Tristan McKenzie, how it affects the team? Does it affect any of your fantasy teams?
Zero, no victory laps, but last year I had a lot of Tristan McKenzie and this year I have zero. It was for numerous reasons. Nothing was, I think he's going to get injured. It wasn't anything related to that, but, in regards to McKenzie and his future outlook, I would steer clear right now. Last night, Nelson Souza was asking me about him in round 15 of a main event. This was before the news came out. He fell to round 16. I would still sit on the sidelines. If you're wanting to be on the optimistic side, so you're reading this, the tweet from a beat reporter would be Zach Basil, and he said, be shut down for throwing for 2 weeks, two plus weeks. So two plus means I would say a minimum of three, right? That sounds longer than 2 weeks, two plus. for me at least. And then being sidelined for up to 8 weeks overall, then we need to ramp up, right? We need to build up a pitch count. I would say best case scenario for me in my outlook would be, is he pitching in June? And for me, it's going to become for fantasy managers right now playing in the NFBC with no IL slots. Do you hold or do you cut? And then if you're still drafting, I'm not buying whatever the dip is. I'm not buying a pitcher that's currently hurt like that and missing that significant amount of time. Or at least I'm going to guess that he's going to miss a significant amount of time. It's unfortunate. A big fan of him as a baseball fan. But yeah, for me, I'm out and was out. And what do you think, Vlad, if you have some? And are you holding? Are you cutting? I think that's kind of where we need to discuss.
Yeah, I think you drafted him in the sixth round of mm-hmm. your 15 teamer. You're holding him. I think it gets tricky if you don't have a lot of drops, you have a really strong team, and you have better stashes and multiples. Like if you have Bryce Harper and Carlos Rodon or something like that, you know, and him, that's too little roster flexibility. You won't be able to work with that. You're going to put yourself in a real big pickle, you know, early on in the season. I think in 12 teamers, he's a little bit more cuttable. I think some people will just kind of hold because of the name brand and because of the high draft equity. But man, yeah, I really don't know. It's going to be tough. It's going to be a little bit of time, and we don't know how recovery is going to go for him. So we'll see. And then, you know, of course, he has been obviously sorry to people that have him, but he is one of the guys, and it's not a victory lap, I swear. He's been a VDP fade. He's been somebody at FTN here that we've been avoiding at the draft price. Of course, there's a point at which, you know, he became worth it. And I think that was like a round or two later. But when Scott Jenstad stepped in for you a couple weeks ago, both him and I discussed kind of why, you know, he kind of outperformed his metrics last season and wasn't sure about any more growth in the strikeout rate. So yeah, so for the most part, that's a bummer. And right, I would not, I think it would take him to be like a 21st round pick for me to take him if I had any more drafts. But yeah, anything like within the top 300, maybe it's a mistake, but like, I just can't do it because there are enough other stashes that I like. Anthony Volpe and Jordan Walker, these two dudes are getting off the chains. It was announced on Saturday, right? Mm-hmm. Or Sunday.
Sunday for Volpe.
Yeah. 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 On Volpe and.
Or for both of them, actually.
Yeah. You know what? And it was, I was wrong. I did think that Volpe was going to jump up to like a fourth, fifth rounder. That hasn't been the case.
He did 67 men. And I know who did it.
Yeah. Well,
we're not the best of friends, but yeah, carry on.
Well, we don't have. Well, the thing is about Volpe, like he's still in the 90-120 range, just like overall, right? There's always going to be someone that pops him higher. He might go lower in some drafts, but he is still kind of in that round 6-7 range. I think one of the things taking a little steam off of it is the reality that he's not going to be the leadoff man, right? He is going to be the number 9 hitter to start the season. Maybe he can get to the top of the lineup at some point if he just continues to stay hot. But there's a lot of talent on this team, right? I mean, it's pretty loaded. I think the Yankees are going to use DJ LeMahieu to lead off to start off the year. I mean, this is a dude that's won a batting title. He's hit over 330 before in a season. So I think if he has anything left in a tank, it's probably a good idea there. But yeah, I mean, you know, Volpe, Jordan Walker, I haven't been able to pay a top 100 price because there are a lot of other guys. Like if I'm looking at him versus Tim Anderson or Dansby Swanson, or even Xander Bogaerts. I know it sounds crazy, but you know, is it really come to the point where it's crazy that I like those three guys over a rookie who has never played a major league game? Like something wrong with me?
No. And that's kind of how I go about my business. And it's been a flaw at times, right? Missing out in the main event on Bobby Witt Jr., missing out on Julio Rodriguez last year. There's been thoughts all over, of course, right? On a tantalizing player like this. And when it comes to Anthony Volpe, and, you know, some people have said he's nowhere near Bobby Witt or Julio Rodriguez. So I don't know why we'd be comparing the two. Our friend Rob Silver, I believe it was him. Sorry if it wasn't, comparing maybe why is Corbin Carroll going to be going this high compared to Anthony Volpe. And the thing for me would be, well, Corbin Carroll has an 8-year contract or whatever it is now. Right. Volpe, for him right now, they're still arranging outcomes that he's taken a bus to a minor league game, you know, on bobblehead night. So I think that there's differences when it comes to looking at players that have a contract when they're a rookie coming in that are coming with this high praise. And Volpe doesn't have that. There's also a lot of other youth competition, and there is depth up the middle for the Yankees. So if things don't go right, right out the gate, you know, could stay lower in the lineup. The team context is good. The lineup's going to turn over a lot, but there's just still a lot of volatility at that draft capital. And I did mention the min pick of 67. So that's early, mid, fifth round. So, yeah, no Volpe, no Walker.
Yeah, I got a little bit of Walker. I think I got him in. I helped Jake Kuchek, our prospect vault guy. He recently had a baby and he couldn't make it to his scarf draft here in Los Angeles. So I came in and stepped in for him. I got him a Jordan Walker. He's a fan. So drafted for him and got Walker there, and also got him on an OC and I think one DC. So got that. I got no Volpe. So I won't openly be rooting against him. I won't even really be rooting against him. I just, you know, conscious decision to fade. Three pitchers here that, you know, worth noting. You got Alex Cobb, had a little bit of a knee stinger. He did throw four minor league innings yesterday. He looks like he's not going to start on the IL, and he may actually get into the rotation this weekend. So those who drafted Cobb and thinking he may have to wait a week or maybe even two, you'll be in good shape. And then of course you've got the situation with the Mets, David Peterson in. He's going to get the second start of the game, so it seems, and Mr. McGill. Tyler McGill is going to start in AAA for now. And then the most tilting for many folks, and again, another fade here at FTN, at least at the price, Grayson Rodriguez, he's going to start off in the minors. Manager Hyde there, a little concerned of him, you know, with him. But you know, talk about anything you want on those three guys.
Yeah, so with Alex Cobb, I know that a lot of people liked him last year. They're backing on him this year, and it seems like things are going to be working out on the positive side for him. He didn't end up falling too much, right? I was thinking, man, maybe he'll slip a little bit with this slight injury news, and unfortunately he didn't. In my Saturday Vegas main event, he went at pick 14.2. So I think if you have him, you should be happy, and I think he's going to be ready to roll. Sounds great. The Grayson Rodriguez thing, that is a big bummer. Again, these youthful young rookies, right? Range and outcomes. He's in the minors. Like this is part of the portfolio and volatility. And so for me with Rodriguez and even Hunter Brown, although Hunter Brown is pitching in the majors, the difference with the main event and getting into spring compared to the early perks of drafting in the winter is you get these guys round 20, round 21. And then I think that helps eliminate the FOMO as the draft capital increases and the cost continues to go up. You might feel less inclined to have to get that guy now as everything's getting more exciting around them. So I do have a little bit of Rodriguez and Hunter Brown. But again, the price was a bit later in like a DC, a four honey. And so I didn't really have that. Oh, I still need him. I don't have him at all. So, you know, one of those winter perks, I think it is, for me at least, when wanting to draft one of those rookies, getting them a little bit later on. We saw the same thing with Witt and Rodriguez. I had a DC last year with Julio Rodriguez, I think in round 19, 20, 21, 22, you know, and then he ended up being in round 4 or 5. So there's some winter perks with those rookies, I think, as they continue to rise during the spring. Who else did you mention? David Peterson? Peterson,
and then Grayson Rodriguez. I was going to say, like, yeah, we're kind of like patting ourselves on the back. I mean, obviously it's not an injury victory lap because he's starting off in the minors, and neither of us obviously predicted he's going to start off in the minors. For us, correct me if I'm wrong, but like kind of the reason why we weren't taking him at ADP was because of the innings limitations, and more so on a per start basis, the concern that, you know, how many times early in the season or even at all, was he really going to get an opportunity to grab a win and pitch into the fifth inning, and just kind of the durability within starts. So obviously his stuff has been great in the minors. In spring, maybe the results haven't been so good, but like, you know, I think it was Eno Saris mentioned his stuff plus was off the charts, you know, here in spring. But the manager just doesn't think he's ready. Got some stuff going on, wants to start in the minors. Obviously, he is their best pitcher. There's no doubt. He's super talented. Again, we're not taking a victory lap. It's just for the price. A guy that was expected to throw 120, 130 innings, to me, wasn't worth going, you know, 180th overall, wherever he was going.
A couple of things. So managing him in a Fab League versus a DC, like I mentioned, those are two completely different things with somebody with the innings limitations, right? And then the draft capital differential is pretty significant. Our boy, you know, Stuff Plus, it's awesome and great, but you know, the organization themselves, in quotes, was not ready to jump into a major league rotation, just getting not past the fourth inning. And we know what he's capable of. I wasn't expecting this. We were hoping he would show up, Grayson Rodriguez, as a better version of himself. So Eno Saris and his Stuff Plus metric and whatever the Orioles data and their metrics and what they saw, big difference there, you know, between the two. And, you know, Eno did quote the tweet that I was, the quote that I just mentioned, it was from Andy Kotzka. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see when he comes up and stuff, but, you know, a lot of people have different evaluations and pitch leaderboards and, you know, metrics, and it's hard to get everything right. I'll just leave it at that.
Yep. Another big one here, the Angels. Yeah, baby. Logan Ohape back into our lives. I backed off the Ohapi train because in Fab Leagues, I'm not going to take, you know, my second catcher in like round 15 and then, you know, have to draft a third catcher when I only have a 7-person bench. So I was not in on the Ohapi train because everything in camp was saying Matt Thace was going to earn that second spot. He's out of options, you know, older veteran. Let's get Ohapi into the minors. That's not the case now. As it turned out, Max Stassi is going to start the season off on the IL, and Ohapi will be in there. And this is a great opportunity for him to earn his keep. This is a perfect, you know, perfect chance here on this team. Also, with the Angels, you got Jake Lamb is in now because Jared Walsh is on the IL. We know Jared Walsh had the thoracic outlet, surgery in the off season or last season. And yeah, it's kind of been a bumpy ride for him, even though he has had a pretty good spring. And that's why people have been drafting Jarrett Walsh. But that's where we're at with the Angels. Stassi and Walsh will start off on the IL. Lamb is in as a bench guy. Logan Ohapi back in our lives.
Yeah, so the Hoppy people, man, shout out to you guys. Hopefully you have some fun with it. I'm rooting for you. Honestly, I am. Seems like a fun player. Hopefully it pays off. No qualms there. I'm all about getting a cheap C2 that has a little bit of upside. I'm all about that life, you know, or at least I used to be. If you look at some of my drafts over the weekend in the auction, I spent $26 on two catchers in the auction, by the way. Pat myself on the back. Golf clap. So Brandon Belt, I ended up with Jared Walsh, actually, and I want to ask you about him. I drafted him in the 24th round after getting sniped on Brandon Belt in the 23rd. I was looking for a 1BCI, and so Belt was gone in the 23rd. I ended up with CJ Abrams. I actually tweeted about that a little bit earlier today. Abrams, it was his max pick in all the main events at 338, round 23. I'm always light. I'm a guy that's always light on speed. And he was there. And, you know, at this point, he was finally popping for me. Yeah. I was like, whoa, okay. He's got a, you know, he's highlighted now. It was like, okay. I see you, CJ Abrams. I see you. And so I ended up getting sniped on Brandon Belt, but getting CJ Abrams, and the domino effect was Jared Walsh in round 24. The unfortunate news that you did mention about Walsh beginning on the IL. So yeah, probably going to have to cut bait if the news doesn't get positive over the next week. So that was unfortunate for Walsh after having a positive spring.
Yeah, that's the part.
Hopefully the headache stuff isn't too severe either. I don't like hearing stuff about that kind of thing.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So hopefully he will be okay. On the Rays, man, I'm pot committed. I've been drafting Josh Lau in my main events, and you know, I don't think I picked him up in auction, but main events, I think I have him on all three so far. So him and Luke Raley, former Dodger, former many minor league teams. Luke Raley are both on the team. No Jonathan Aranda to start. So we'll see. I mean, Josh Lowe still is striking out a bit in the minors, but he's hitting well. I don't expect him to be playing every day, probably just against righties, but glad to see those guys in. couple other notes, and you just kind of let me know anything that stands out to you.
Sure.
You know, the Royals, they're obviously, you know, Franmil Reyes is going to end up making the team. Matt Duffy, I don't think the Duffy part is fantasy relevant. Don't really think the Franmil is. Maybe at some point he'd be, you know, you pick him up for a week when he's hot, but for the most part, not that exciting. The Tigers, they actually are going to be sending, or they did send Akil Baddoo down to AAA. Kerry Carpenter, the lefty bat, is going to make the team, so it seems. Same with Ryan Kreidler. He's like a middle infielder. I think he can play in the outfield as well. And then they just traded for Zach McKinstry, former Dodger, former Cub. So I don't know. Is that are you on your way to Detroit now, since McKinstry went the path of LA to Chicago to Detroit?
If so, hopefully Michael Govier has some room for me.
Yeah, I think he may have already left for Canada. I don't know.
Okay. I'd like to go to Canada. So, yeah, no, nothing interesting there. Did you mention the Dodger stuff? Well, no.
Well, obviously, James Outman made the team. He looks like he's going to get a lot of action. Hope he's good. I do have a lot of exposure to James Outman. It's kind of transcended from, oh, man, wow, look what Trace Thompson has been doing this last year and how he changed. Yeah, how hard he hits the ball and everything. And then, man, just Outman, I don't know. Maybe it's just kind of the shiny new toy, but whatever it is, the Dodgers like him. He's been hitting well. He really looks the part. And the Dodgers need some people to step up. So he hopefully will play a ton. And then Daniel Hudson should be back at some point. I know you, as a Brewster Gratterall supporter, probably don't like that. You'd like for Brewster to just kind of run with the job, which I think is, you know, it's definitely possible. But Hudson's knee reacted better than he thought and looks like he's on track for middle to maybe end of April.
64% roster ship percentage right now for Daniel Hudson. It's funny, right? Everything's about draft capital and where you're going, what can you do for me, you know, and when does it happen? And so the pecking order in ADP through the winter and up to the spring before the Hudson knee issues, it was Phillips, Hudson, Gratterall. People had a preference. Some people thought Phillips is going to be the guy. Some people think he's going to be the HLR high leverage guy. Some people had the thought, I believe you were one of them, Daniel Hudson. He could, you know, nice little dark horse potential to be a closer. He did get a couple save opportunities last year with the Dodgers. And so then we get the knee issue and now he's on the IL. But there's news that he could be back with the Dodgers organization saying it's doable for him to be back in late April. And when you have a guy like this that is could potentially cost a dollar in free agency in a main event and could potentially be the closer for the team like the Dodgers, I think he warrants a bid. You got to take a dart. You got to see where it goes, what happens. And he's on one of the best teams and he could potentially provide a massive return on an investment. So, yes, I'm in on Gratterall. He is still my current I have one more main event to go tonight. But Brewster Gratterall, I do have as my highest rostered player at 56.3% in NFBC. And that doesn't mean that I'm going to be out on Daniel Hudson. If Daniel Hudson is available in a league and I have just a little bit of wiggle room, I'm going to be willing to take a very cheap fab dart on him because there still is a possibility that he ends up with the most saves on the Dodgers. And I want a piece of that if it's for free or not free, but via fab right now.
Yeah. And of course you mentioned it, it's the roster flexibility. And, you know, if you do need saves, I think they're we'll get to that point, I think in a week's time. And plus we'll see a weekend of activity, but he can completely fly under the radar in fab because there's going to be so much action, so many things happening. It's going to be hard for somebody to try to pop and stash an IL guy who may or may not get the saves when he gets back. I mean, I think he's the favorite for saves. I think no matter what happens over that first 2-3 weeks, I do think Hudson's going to get in the mix there eventually. So we'll see. But again, it's a matter of what you're giving up to get. So definitely be careful there. Cubs, they sent down Christopher Morel. A bit of a shock to some. Miles Mastroboni is going to make the roster. Rather flexible Swiss Army knife there on the team. And then Edwin Rios, our former Dodger, he's going to be playing a little bit of third base. They're going to mix in Wisdom at third base, Patrick Wisdom, as well as slap hitter Nick Madrigal. So there's the Cubs for you. And then the Brewers mixing and shaking things up. Their two young studs, Joey Weimer and Sal Frelick, are going to start the season in AAA, as is Keston Hura. And then actually Luke Voit, they confirmed and signed his contract. Bryce Terang made the roster as a middle infielder, shortstop, and then Owen Miller, former Cleveland Guardian. Those three guys are in.
Yeah, Chris Morel, man, he was getting some love in the main event. He had a min pick of 226 and ADP of 338 when looking at the 23 completed main events since March 25th. So that's unfortunate. Hopefully he's not down for too long. But again, I think this is another example and highlight of a rookie that we range in outcomes, man, is they're riding a bus for their own bobblehead day in the minor leagues. And, you know, I'd rather just take a boring old veteran that's sitting fifth every day in a lineup at that point. So, who else do you want to tell? The Brewers. Oh. So Bryce Terang making the lineup is interesting, I think, for the Brewers, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's going to be a middle infielder there, maybe get a little bit of helium these last couple of weeks. I mean, he's going to be mm-hmm. bottom of the order guy, but has a little bit of speed if you need that and need a little bit of middle infield help there. After pick 300, he should be there, should be available.
He's also going to get 2B eligibility. So I like that. I like the 2B SS. Hopefully it works out. I don't have any, but I did want to mention him as interesting because he does have double digit stolen base upside. And I need that at times.
Yeah, definitely intriguing there at that point in the draft. Final note, and then we'll close things out. The A's manager, Mark Kotze. And so to make a poor situation even poorer, Mark Kotze says that all three gentlemen are going to be in the mix for saves. This is the Trevor May that we've talked about, the one that I've been on since the beginning for some weird reason, even though he's had a horrible spring and manager hasn't committed to him as the closer and, you know, hasn't really been healthy in a couple of years. But Trevor May, Danny Jimenez, he of the reduced velocity 89 mile per hour fastball, and I'm sure he got that up over the last couple of weeks. And then newly signed Juris Familia, the three of those guys, Trevor May, Danny Jimenez, and Juris Familia are going to be in the mix for A's closer. There's no set way that they're going to use those guys. All can be in the mix for saves. And that's just a nasty situation. I mean, I really hope we're not at the point where people are dropping $80 on Juris Familia next week.
I'm feeling so great about my 24th round Trevor May, telling myself that it's the A's. They're just going to use Trevor May because he was, you know, second half last year. He was so awesome. Look at him. And then his spring has kind of gotten off meh. I'm going to hold for now. Obviously, I want to see how it plays out. I want to see the usage. We might not get to see any save opportunities in Oakland this year. I know shitty teams get saves too, because when they win, it's usually not by much. But that could potentially be a really bad headache. Fortunately, it was round 24. If I do notice May doesn't get the first save opportunity, that's for damn sure I'm cutting bait right away. So if it is some sort of committee, it's the Oakland A's. Like, we could call bullshit, and they do want to use somebody and trade them off and get as, you know, a cheap prospect with controllability. We know their MO. So if May is pitching in the seventh or eighth inning of a game this weekend against the Angels, which is likely anyways, if they're losing every game, I'm probably just going to cut bait and move on.
All right, that makes sense. All right, here, the last 10 minutes or so, we're just going to run through some of our, guess they're bold thoughts on the season, but they're also kind of just overall general, kind of an open book here as far as what we, you know, it's not just like, oh, this guy is going to lead the league in this. And we're going to have that in the season in FTN on Wednesday. Everyone that is a contributor to MLB here at FTN, as well as our guest writers. So, you know, Phil DeSalt, Steve Weimer, Alex Fast, Jenny Butler, Shelley V, and Greg Jewett, you will see their thoughts on who they think this year's Yelich is, who they think is going to be the MVP. Like, we're going to have our superlatives and our awards. That'll come out on Wednesday. This is going to be a little bit more general, just a few, you know, sort of bullet points of how we see certain things going in the season. But wanted to start with you. Let's throw three out there. What's your first one, Matt?
Yeah, so you just mentioned how FTN colleagues and the guest writers for the draft guide, we're all going to be putting out our bold predictions soon. And mine actually correlates for the first one. So I'm going to give away one of my bold predictions that we'll be releasing on Wednesday. And it's the number one overall fantasy hitter. And it also just correlates with, I guess it's the same thing over here for me. I wanted to give that as a bold thought. But also in a general sense as to why. But Kyle Tucker is going to finish as the number one overall fantasy hitter. Not player, because I think that's going to be Shohei Ohtani. But with Kyle Tucker, I think we have two injuries with the Houston Astros right now, and that's Jose Altuve and Michael Brantley. Those are, we know for sure come opening day that Kyle Tucker is finally going to be hitting at the top of the Houston Astros lineup. That is a huge, massive bump for Kyle Tucker, who had an abysmal... Let me see here real quick. My apologies. I would like to pull up his actual amount of runs on the back of his baseball card. He had 71 runs last year, which mitigates the 107 RBI because the counting stats is then now less than 180, which isn't great. So now he's going to be bumped up in the Houston Astros lineup. Jordan Alvarez is looking healthy. I love that. I think Kyle Tucker could legit go 30-30 and hit 320 to 330 this season. And if so, he's going to be the number one fantasy player. I think that the shift rules slightly benefit him just a little bit. I think that the batting average we saw last year is certainly going to be regressing back to what we saw in the season before when he had a 294 batting average. The runs, man, it's going to be a huge benefit for him hitting at the top of the lineup. And yeah, I know Dusty Baker did say before Michael Brantley went on the IL that Brantley's been my leadoff guy and I've seen him there forever, blah, 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 blah. I'm going to call bullshit on Dusty because when Kyle Tucker, when he starts the season at the top of the lineup, he's going to end up hitting first or second all year. I'm pretty confident in that. And just that alone is going to boost a massive amount of profit for him when he only had 71 runs last season in 609 plate appearances. He did hit 30 home runs with 25 stolen bases. I think that there is certainly room for growth for both of those to go up. This is somebody with elite levels of plate discipline, with an elite level of eye. The sky's the limit. I did mention in our outfield preview that I think that it is very possible that Kyle Tucker outperforms Ronald Acuna Jr. this year. I think that he will have a higher batting average than him. And then you look at the contact, 81% career rate. It's just, he's fucking phenomenal, man. And I think we're just slightly sleeping on him. And oh man, yeah. If you can get him at 7, 8, 9. Yeah. Number one overall fantasy hitter, Kyle Tucker.
I love it. I love that call. I think it's a good one. Obviously the Astros competitive every year. He seems to only be getting better. And man, I was one pick away. My first main event last weekend, not this last weekend, but the weekend before, I had pick 11 and he fell to 10. So it was really close. But that would have been nice. I think that's still his max. My first one, I'll run through it quickly. I think the Rays are just going to be a massive ray of fantasy goodness this year. I think they're going to be one of the top producing teams in baseball. I think they're going to be competitive in the division. I think there's a chance that them and the Blue Jays are kind of the new wave, and they're both so good that they force the Yankees into third place. So sorry, Yankee fans, don't take it personally. It's just, I think it's, you know, all within the range of outcomes. And I love this team. I think, you know, maybe they're not super, you know, sexy from a home run, you know, power, massive power perspective or the ballpark for offense. But man, if Brandon Lau is healthy and he bounces back and hits 35 bombs, I mean, he's hit 39 before, that would be nice. I think Yandy Diaz is one of the best buys in fantasy period all summer or all spring and winter. He is the first guy that I featured in my very first article way back in December. And I'm still on that Yandy train. I think he hit 290 with 100 plus runs. The conversation with him is all the same. Oh, but the launch angle, but what if he, you know, this is the same conversations we had before with Christian Yelich 5-6 years ago, conversations we have with Vladimir Guerrero when he's hitting too many ground balls. Not saying I know that Yandy Diaz is going to figure out this year. I'm just saying I won't be shocked with it. If he does figure that part out, then we're talking a massive season. If he doesn't and he just hits like 12 or whatever, you're still going to get the runs and the good batting average. Great plate discipline on this team in general, I think. Isaac Paredes is one of those guys. Manny Margot, decent batting eye. Same with Harold Ramirez, a dude that usually hits over 300. So love this offense. Obviously, Josh Lowe, would love to see him evolve as well. Great starting pitching. I mean, everyone's in love with Drew Rasmussen and Jeffrey Springs. You know, there's one of those guys can emerge in the back end of the rotation. Like if it's not Luis Patino, who's had a horrible spring, maybe he finds himself in AAA again once he's healthy. Or one of Yanni Chirino steps up again, or Taj Bradley emerges. Curtis Meade on offense is back eventually. Lots to like on the Rays. So I'm a big fan of them. I just think they're a haven for, I don't know, haven's not the right word, but there's just a lot of fantasy profit blossoming here on this team.
Hell of management and organization and shitty ownership. But yeah, the Rays are going to ray and they're going to probably kick ass per usual. Your first one correlates with my second one quite a bit. And it comes with the Yankees. I have the Blue Jays winning the AL East. And with that comes Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. both finishing inside the top five of MVP votes. Kevin Gausman wins the AL Cy Young. Jordan Romano ends up with the most saves. Brandon Belt has his first 450-plus plate appearance season since 2017. George Springer goes 30-10, 30 home runs and 10 stolen bases. And we get a little bit of regression in a positive way for Whit Merrifield, Jose Berrios, and Yusei Kikuchi, with all of them improving. I think that the Blue Jays, it'll be in my bold prediction piece. So I'm going to give away that one as well right now. I have them as the ALCS champion going to the World Series. So it all correlates with that as well, and fantasy with fantasy baseball as well.
Perfect. My second one is similar to your last two, and it has to do with the White Sox. Just a really good vibe on the White Sox this season. The reverse curse of La Russa, Tony La Russa is gone, and all that, you know, negativity and just things falling apart, nobody wanting to play with him or for him, all the injuries and the bad training team. I think things bounce the other way this season. I think both Luis Robert Jr. and Eloy Jimenez have MVP type seasons. I think Andrew Vaughn improves greatly. You should have Tim Anderson bouncing back. Maybe your boy Yan Moncada can stay healthy and get going. I think Oscar Colas is a stud and a Rookie of the Year candidate. The rest of the pitching staff, I mean, outside of Clevenger, who I think is going to kind of stink, your front four is solid. Dylan Cease, Lance Lynn, Lucas Giolito, and Michael Kopech. I do think Kopech is struggling a little bit right now. Hopefully he figures things out. Hopefully he's healthy, but there's some time that he needs to bounce back. But like that rotation, not very deep, but maybe they can get some help if they're doing well. But I do think they compete in the AL Central. I think I think Cleveland and Minnesota are both like a little against the ropes. They're both kind of having some injury issues. Granted, it's early. There's a full season. There's a lot of things that can happen. But I think the White Sox have the right base in place. I mean, man, even my boy Sebi Zavala, right? Something gets, Grandal gets hurt or something like that. I mean, Zavala's got five spring homers, man. Love that guy. He could catch. He could play defense. Ronaldo's lights out. Ronaldo Lopez, that is. And then at some point this year, we'll probably get that. Hopefully Liam Hendricks fully recovers and we get that really feel good story, re-energizing the team at the right time. He returns, closes out games, and maybe gets them into the playoffs.
Yeah, I love it. Hey, did you know that Andrew Benintendi has the largest contract for a White Sox player of all time? Like the biggest, I think it was the biggest, the most amount of money that they've ever given to a player.
I forgot sure what the SNL skit is, but it's,
That's a good one. That is a good one. Always rooting for Liam Hendricks too. I think if he's available, maybe take a look at him potentially, because there could be some potential for him to come back this season. That is in the range of outcomes in 89% in the main event. So there is just a little bit of wiggle room even in the high stakes drafts. Always rooting for Liam. And Pedro Grifol with the White Sox, the local radio stations and people around here are buzzing. The players are also buzzing. They love them. So, I think the White Sox actually win the Central. I'm with you. Okay, my third one. This is finally the year you can win without being desperate for the need for speed. If you just put together a group of guys that previously have stolen 8 to 10 bases, examples of Ian Happ, and Gleyber Torres and Jeremy Peña, the aforementioned Andrew Benintendi. You get some of those guys, and obviously, you know, your first round pick guy like a Kyle Tucker or Kuna, whoever it may be, right? You got to get the big foundation piece, solid player like that. I don't think you'll end up needing to chase the Esturi Ruiz potentially, or the CJ Abrams that I drafted, guys like that. I think that this could potentially be the year with the new rule changes, with the pitch clock and the, you know, throwing over to first base, that these 8 to 10 stolen base guys could potentially spike to a range where they correlate and contribute as a group, that will not have a team like me finish in the 10th percentile in stolen bases this season. Uh-huh. I think that we do see a difference this year.
Yeah. And I think that's going to be an early topic too. Like, people are going to be keeping track of the, how fast or what the difference is in saves, you know, say the middle point of February or middle point of April, end of April, compared to previous seasons, how the rules are affecting that, how that will be affected in the fantasy landscape, or, are, you know, are we doing it right by drafting more, say, stolen bases because they're going to be more abundant? Will they be easier to get on the wire? A lot of things that we're going to look at. Should be super, super interesting. I like it, and I like some of those names you mentioned. Finally, my third one, and we'll close things out, is closers and saves. I have a feeling that they're going to be even messier than ever before. And I know, how can you say this, Vlad? It's just been so incredibly messy, not just previous seasons with all the committees, but like the preseason, right? Like Edwin Diaz and Raisel Iglesias hurt, and Kenley Jansen had, you know, some concerns there. Like, how can it get any more messier? It will. I'm pretty sure it will. I think more managers are going to kind of keep that door open, keeping us guessing week to week when it comes to FAB on Sundays. It's going to be even more difficult to make decisions. We'll probably see even more injuries, more committees that will not have like a set guy in. So it's going to be tough. I think there are going to be a lot of us having to make tough fantasy decisions, overspending on some bad closers or guys that don't pan out as closers. So we're going to have to be very diligent, make sure that we're not spending, you know, 60% of our FAB money this season chasing closers in April and May. Got to be very careful about that. We'll help guide you through that here at FTN. If you haven't signed up yet, ftnfantasy.com. If you missed all your, if you've done drafts without us, and you have not had our resources, and you got this far, at least join us for the regular season. FAB content, Matt's hitting piece, weekly strategy on hitting. Eric Cross is handling the pitching. Michael Govier and his stuff. We got you covered this year, so make sure you join us. 20% off. Use FTN Pod for FTNFantasy.com.
I'm also going to be having, which is frequently updated, it'll be on the site. The tech team does a great job of sort of getting, because you and I have no clue when it comes to having an interactive, you know, like a Google Sheet being interactive on a website. So the tech team is basically going to be taking my Google Sheet, which is going to be color coded with all sorts of stuff. And it's just going to be, it's going to be clear and concise with a star rating for the closer report. And it'll have, you know, 3 to 5 to potentially, yeah, 3 to 5 guys, I would say, per bullpen. And it'll just be constantly being updated, you know, whether it's news, results, what we're, you know, box scores, what we're seeing, et cetera, just taking everything in and trying to frequently update it. So we are always up to par when it comes to relievers, right? And we're also going to be having that at ftnfantasy.com on Monday, which was yesterday morning. We started back up Mondays with Matty Wood. Ben Tidd, who finished third place in the NFBC main event overall last season, joined me to talk fantasy baseball and yesterday for 30 minutes. So go ahead and listen to that if you haven't already. And then FTN, I'm going to be doing the fun project with the terrible outing, but this year it's going to be coming with some metrics and some more, you know, detailed data, so to speak, on every single terrible outing. And that will be a lot of fun. And that is coming soon. So hopefully I do not piss you off on Twitter when your pitcher gets lit up.
Yes, it's all happening and the season's about to start. And got to thank you guys so much for, draft season's over. It's been fun. It's the best time of year. But now we get the actual baseball, all the tilting. And at the end, we'll be declaring some champions. But the ride has only just begun. Thank you for continuing to listen to us. For Matthew Matty Wood Davis, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. And we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with Matthew Davis and Vlad Sedler. Make sure to follow your hosts on Twitter at @_MattyWood_ and @RotoGut. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.